like to welcome everyone to the next episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. I'm joined by Pastor Bob Brandon. My name's Jamie Sanchez. And Bob, I feel like I haven't seen you in a month of Sundays.
Well, not for the podcast. That's right. We've seen each other around and so on, but not for our favorite thing.
No. We've been off a few weeks. You've been traveling.
I've been working so hard, it's not even funny.
I know. I see it.
And hot
see
weather,
it.
Too. East Coast is getting hit.
But excited to be back. You know, we'll have several new episodes going on to the website this evening. We've got some more information, exciting information today to talk about.
You know, that's right.
Learning a little bit more about the truth and the word. And as always, I have bunches of questions because I don't discern and understand everything that's written there. So I feel so privileged to be able
that's
to spend this time with you.
That's great because, as usual, I don't have any answers.
I thought you had them all today. So we're just going to put the questions out into the cosmos, I guess.
Nothing wrong with that.
So we're gonna cover today in our first podcast. We're gonna cover Genesis chapters 23 and 24 both, and there's some interesting reading in there. It's some stuff that I honestly just don't understand. You know, and understand why it's in there, and looking forward to getting back into the Word with you and getting our podcast out there.
Well, it's really, when you put it that way, I want to raise this one issue, that's a good thing to say, like, why is this in there? And for a long time, I struggled personally with that question, not on any given passage, but even the validity of the question. It's there, so why am I asking, why is it there?
Great point.
You know, I'm just here to learn what God has to say. But however, over the years, I've learned that actually is a very valuable question, because having tried to write some things myself, you can tell Moses is not an unskilled author.
Correct.
As a human, and God is not an unskilled author.
Period.
You know, in his divinity at all. So anybody who's written will tell you they have a plan, you know, when they're writing. They just don't freewheel it. Okay, right. They have a plan in their mind, and they're putting things down that all fit into the grand plan. So that question's legitimate. It doesn't mean we can always answer it accurately, but it's a good question to ask.
Worth researching. Worth looking into.
It's worth delving into. So he's definitely got a plan. I mean, think about it. This is 50 chapters, the book of Genesis. But think of what that covers. The creation of the world, the life of Abraham, the flood, the Tower of Babel, life of Isaac and Jacob, and so on. And a chapter in a Bible is not like a chapter in a novel, right? So it's basically a chapter in a Bible is maybe... As you open up the Bible, it's on either side of the page.
Right.
Roughly, right? So in 75 pages, Moses is going to tell you all that stuff. So all that to say, he's highly selective. So everything he's got in here is important.
There's purpose by it.
There's purpose and it's important. Or, you know, he's very selective. So he did not put it there.
Well, and I think that's good that you put it that way, because... It now not changes my question, but the question kind of evolves, I guess, at that point to, I know that it's in there for a reason, I guess, is really what it comes down to. I know there's a reason. I know there's a purpose there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that purpose is not immediately obvious to me.
Yeah, and so... Then we'll talk about, so what are the gaps we have to get over in order for that purpose to become more clear? And the first thing you have to do is realize Moses was not writing to you and I in 21st century America. He was writing for us, but not to us. So who was he writing to? Jews coming out of Egypt in 1450 BC. So that's the first gap to get. You got to start thinking like a Jewish slave coming out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. But once you start thinking like that, you know, so why would Sarah's death be important to you? Well, when we read that passage, we'll see why right. Moses is putting that in there, to a slave coming out of Egypt in 1450 BC. Then, as God's children, we can see, so what would that mean to me today? How would we apply that and so on? But that's the process to go through to right. begin answering those things.
And I tell you, we talk about it a lot, but the foundation in this first book is, I know in our first 19 podcasts, I've learned an incredible amount.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a book, and I don't know if I'm the only one that did this, but I just kind of glossed over it. You know, first read through, it's like, oh, great, okay, great, there's Noah, oh, okay, mm-hmm. there's how man came around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's the Tower of Babel. But I didn't really see the significance. I wasn't, you know, from the standpoint that I was reading the Bible at that time.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why you can read the Bible forever. I see things now when I read it through that I didn't see a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. But the only reason I'm seeing those things is because I've kept reading it and reading other materials about it, you know, laying a foundation, but I see new stuff all the time. What you're describing is a very natural process.
Well, and that almost makes me feel good to hear that, Bob. It's like watching Tiger Woods hit a bad golf shot, you know.
Oh, yeah.
it makes you feel good as a golfer to know that even he does that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's comforting to know that I'm not alone in that position.
Oh no, you have to recreate the history of the ancient Near East, their mindset, a lot of times their languages. That takes a lifetime, and then some, really.
Right.
But it's a labor of love, is how I would describe it. You know, mm-hmm. much like a marriage. You know, saying it's, see, Kathy and I were married in 1996, so we're about 14 years into it, and I would say, oh yeah, in year one did I love her? Oh yeah. In year 14, a lot more. But
right.
I wouldn't belittle my first year. That was an important
great point.
Year, you know.
Great
but
point.
It can still get deeper.
Great. I love the analogy, because it's
and
building
I'm sure
the relationship.
In 10 more years, I'll look back on this year we're having now and go, yeah, I really wasn't as far along as I thought. You know, I love her now even more than I did.
Right.
Yeah.
It's as that relationship strengthens and the bonds are built. Makes total sense, Bob.
So why don't we jump in and read chapter 23? It's not all that long, and then we'll take your questions and see what we can discern.
Okay.
Now Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. Sarah died in Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Then Abraham rose from before his dead, and he spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, I'm a stranger and a sojourner among you. Give me a burial site among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. The sons of Heth answered Abraham, saying to him, Hear us, my lord. You're a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our graves. None of us will refuse his grave for burying your dead. So Abraham rose and bowed to the people of the land, the sons of Heth. And he spoke with them, saying, If it's your wish for me to bury my dead out of my sight, hear me, and approach Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns, which is at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence for a burial site. Now Ephron was sitting among the sons of Heth. And Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the sons of Heth, even of all who went in the gate of his city, saying, No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field, and I give you the cave that is in it. In the presence of the sons of my people, I give it to you. Bury your dead. And Abraham bowed before the people of the land. He spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, "If you will only please listen to me, I will give the price of the field. Accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there." Then Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, "My lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver, what is that between me and you? So bury your dead." Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, commercial standard. So Ephron's field, which was in Machpelah, which faced Mamre, the field and cave which was in it, and all the trees which were in the field, that were within all the confines of its border, were deeded over to Abraham for a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth, before all who went in at the gate of his city. After this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field at Machpelah, facing Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded over to Abraham for a burial site by the sons of Heth.
First question.
Okay.
Who are the sons of Heth?
Excuse me, I was drinking some soda there. Have you heard in history of the Hittites?
See, yes.
You know how those races are named? You know, it's surprising in some sense that the Jews aren't called like Abrahamites.
Right.
Or something. But, so they're the sons of Heth, the Hittites. Very a dominant group in the ancient Near East. And there were different strains or offshoots of them. So this is not the strain that's in like southeastern Turkey, Asia Minor, that was dominant, had many treaties with the Egyptians and one of the dominant people groups on earth at that time. This is an offshoot of them that happens to live in the land of Canaanite. So they're the Hittite, the sons of Heth. So if you put ite on the end of Heth, you drop the H, Hittites.
And that's the Hittites.
That's one branch of them.
And a strong tribe, a strong nation.
Yeah. Yeah. Here they're more, this is more like a splinter group sort of thing. They don't have armies, so many armies at their disposal like the guys in Asia Minor would have. These guys aren't the ones drawing up treaties with Egypt and so on, but people group in Canaan at the time, the Hittites.
Now, is my understanding right, Bob? So you have the Egyptians, you have the Israelites, you have the Hittites.
What time are we, like here in Genesis?
Right here. We don't have the Israelites.
You don't really have the, no, you just right. Got Abraham and his family, which is sizable. You
sizable,
know, that might
yeah.
be approaching 1,000 people or so.
Wow.
He could field 300 warriors.
Right.
So, I'd say at least 1,000, actually.
And all these different tribes at that time, the Hittites, the Canaanites, all the ites.
Yep. Yeah, the mosquito bites.
The mosquito bites.
That's such a corny joke.
They have different belief systems. They have different things they worship.
You know, they're from... That's a good question. They, yes and no. In some ways, they're all very similar. But in some ways, they might be distinct. You know, they're all going to have a sun god. They're going to have a moon god. They're going to have an underworld god. Things like that. The name might be different for the different tribes. In Egypt, it's Ra, right? He's the sun god and so on. Or Amun is one of their gods. So, you know, all their names, Tutankhamun,
right?
The Amun at the end and so on. So they're all similar in that they have a pantheon, you know, many deities that govern the universe. But they have different names for them. They might have some dietary things that are different from one group to the next. You'll see as we get to the book of Leviticus, you know, God laying down dietary rules for Israel. When that comes down the pipe, they're not weirded out by that. They're very used to groups having different dietary laws.
So would it have been way out of character? I don't know if out of character is the right way to pose this question. But Abraham, is he the only family or tribe at this point that worships one god?
That's probably unique. There was a king in Egypt, Akhenaten, who began doing that. But it was all for political reasons, and the nation, as soon as he died, the nation reverted back to the old pantheon. And he had some motives for doing it. It wasn't pure monotheism like Abraham was doing. It's very hard in some sense to pin down, you know, what we might call Joe on the street back mm-hmm. then and ask him. But from everything we can read, that would have been unique.
And there is purpose, am I correct, that they are in Canaan at this time, that Sarah dies in the land of Canaan?
Yeah, because that's the promise. God right. promised him that land. Right? That's why, really, this chapter, you know, you got like one or two verses on Sarah dying. The rest of it was the deal. You got like 20 verses on the deal to secure the burial site.
Right. And it ends up being a larger plot of land than Abraham.
Yeah, it's not just a cave.
Beginning.
I mean, it's a big field. Big. You know, maybe nearly as far as you could see kind of thing. Not, I don't mean indefinite, but I mean a long, you know, it went a long way.
So why then did Ephron, why not just sell him the cave? Why offer the whole field?
I'm not sure. That I can't answer. Other than, you know, maybe that's the way that contract was drawn up. Like, you own a house, you know, mm-hmm. you have some acreage around your house and so on. If you were going to sell that, you couldn't sell...
just the house.
Yeah, here's my basement, or you'd have to sell. I don't know if that's the case. But, or it may be Ephron wants the money, and he doesn't want to sell just his cave. Maybe he wants to sell the whole field. Who knows? Although, because the price is, you know, it's so hard for us. And honestly, even I'm going to give you an opinion, but it's mm-hmm. I'm holding it loosely, this opinion. But that's, from all that I can discern, that's exorbitant for that much land. That's a ton of money that Abraham's paying for that, and he pays it without hesitating.
Well, and Ephron offered to just give the property.
Perhaps. You could take that one of two ways. He may have initially said that, you know, waiting for Abraham to come back again and say, no, I'll buy it from you. I don't know. If Ephron just gives it to him, here's Abraham's deal. If Ephron just gives it to him, Ephron can take it back.
Right.
See, he doesn't want that. Abraham wants that land. And so he doesn't want it given to him. So even if Ephron was going to do that, Abraham's going to make him charge something for it.
Right.
So it looks like as soon as Ephron discerns that, okay, well, I'm going to ask for the moon. And I'm sure as soon as he says it and Abraham says okay, he probably had seller's remorse, right?
Right.
He should have doubled it because Abraham would have said okay to that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham wants the land. And so it's the main point of the chapter, before I even let you ask your next question, the main point is, do you remember at the Battle of the Five Kings when Abraham wins that mm-hmm. and the guys go, okay, here's your share.
Right.
I don't want it. And it says a reason.
Right.
Right? I don't want somebody to say, they made me rich.
Right.
God's the guy who makes me rich. You know, I depend on him. So he doesn't want the land given to him. You know, not only because Ephron could then take it back at some point, but because he doesn't want someone to be able to say, well, I gave that to Abraham.
Right.
I'm his benefactor.
Right.
Abraham's so tied to God, he wants everything coming from him, so he doesn't mind paying.
Well, and it goes back to what over and over I've learned about Abraham in this study is his strength of faith. And I think all of us, you know, we talked a little bit about before the podcast. I know that that's something that I can absolutely improve on, is the strength of my faith.
Well, think about this, Jamie. Think of how long you've been in a household of faith. Yeah, year and a half out of,
right.
I don't know. Think how long Abraham, by this point in time, has been walking with God.
What, 140 years?
Well, he's going to die at like 175, but I mean, it's been, you know, 40,
yep.
50 years by now, minimum. I'm rounding
mm-hmm.
down. Okay, he knows who
mm-hmm.
God is. So he has no problem trusting God or you know, paying an exorbitant price. He has no problem doing that because he knows God so well by this time.
And it seems to me that he has no problem laying his challenges right at God's feet and give, you know.
In some ways, he sees his challenges as God's challenges.
Wow.
They're the same for him. He's God's guy. So
I think you just said a mouthful right there, Bob. I mean, us as lay people and just reading the Bible, I know for me, I until you just said it that way, I don't think I'd ever really thought of it that way. That my problems, my issues, my challenges are also God's.
Yeah. So see what, just give him the ball.
Right.
You know, he could.
44
dive on one.
He's
pretty good when you hand off to him.
Right.
Usually makes first down.
And so, now, why is it, where is it, I am a stranger and sojourner among you. So obviously, he's not part of their group.
Yeah, he's fairly nomadic. I mean, he moves around within the land of Canaan. He doesn't leave that because that's the promised land, but he moves around. They realize he's not like a Hittite, or he's not an Egyptian, he's not a Babylonian, he's just Abraham. However, they also recognize this is one powerful guy. They say you are a lord and prince among us. I mean, they're very respectful of who Abraham is.
Well, and I guess that was one of my questions. You know, why is that in there? But I think you just answered it.
Well, I mean, when he goes into that battle and wins the whole thing, you know, by himself, basically.
Does word spread? Or
Oh yeah, that's front page news. I mean, people don't mess with Abraham.
So in verse 6, where they say that, "Hear us, my Lord, you are a mighty prince among us."
Yeah.
So
I don't think that's mockery. They really
they
believe
recognize that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Entirely. Now, any significance in why he chose Machpelah? Why he chose that particular cave? Any ideas?
My guess is that was really choice land, but I'm just guessing. So a good burial, because they even say, you know, hey, ask for our best stuff. Right? None of us will refuse you.
Right.
You can have the best stuff. So when he asks that, my guess is that's probably the prime chunk. That's like Sonoma Valley.
You know? Right.
That's like, he asked for something pretty good.
And Mamre, didn't we read about Mamre earlier when...
Yeah, that comes up off in the oaks of Mamre and stuff like that. I'm not sure exactly what to make out of that, but yeah, that does come up.
It's right there in the vicinity of where he received the promise, correct?
I'd have to go back and check, but you're probably right on that.
I think that is.
That's right.
And then let's see here. So,
you know what? One other thing.
Did I miss anything else in there? Those on
no,
that particular
I
chapter, I really got the sense that it was
foothold in the land. He's
right,
buying a chunk of
right,
the promised
that's
land.
The first. That's the
that's
first
right.
little piece of it that is coming to his people that was promised.
That's exactly right. And then this is, you know, a minor point, but we're so prone to views of evolution, you know, and that societies now are so much more complex and everything. This was, you saw that note in there about the silver commercial standard, and it really emphasized, you know, thus the land was deeded over. They had rules for business transactions, you know, particularly land, real estate deals. There were great formalities about how that was done and the legality of it and so on. They were advanced cultures back then.
And
Egypt's already built the pyramid. I mean, these are advanced cultures.
Well, we joke about this quite often. You know, we read an article in our paper here locally in which the people that we're talking about are termed as illiterate goat herders. That's not the case.
No, they're doing business deals, and it's a commercial standard. They're very advanced.
And they're It's not a bunch of illiterate goat herders.
No. Try whoever wrote that needs to go try and build a pyramid. Come back to, you know, without the cranes, right, and so on.
Right.
You go figure out how to do that, and then you come back to me and tell me how much goat herders those guys were.
Right, without even a pencil. I don't think pencils were around back then.
Or even, all that really takes, not even, you don't have to listen to us. Go see an Egyptian exhibit. You know, if the King Tut thing comes through your town, go see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at the artwork those guys could do. Those weren't goat herders. And it wasn't just Egypt.
You know, was it Mesopotamia, Bob, that you showed me pictures of?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The
ziggurats.
Yeah.
They were
incredible.
Incredible. And the way they could work the Euphrates, you know, raise it and lower it. They had lock systems and very advanced irrigation systems. Some of them still, they use very similar things today. And they were sharp.
Shall we move forward?
Yes, because we have to cover, this is a big chapter now.
Yes, it is.
So, let's go after it. So this is what happens after Sarah's death. Chapter 24, verse 1. Now Abraham was old, advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in every way. Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, "Please place your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I live, but you shall go to my country and to my relatives, and take a wife for my son Isaac." The servant said to him, "Suppose the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Should I take your son back to the land from where you came?" Then Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my birth, and who spoke to me and who swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I will give this land,' he will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you'll be free from this, my oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant placed his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Then the servant took 10 camels from the camels of his master, set out with a variety of good things of his master's in his hand. He arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. He made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at evening time, the time when women go out to draw water. And he said, "O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today. Show loving kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I'm standing by the spring, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now may it be that the girl to whom I say, 'Please let down your jar so that I may drink,' and who answers, 'Drink, and I'll water your camels also,' may she be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I shall know that you have shown loving kindness to my master." It came about, after he had finished speaking, that behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor, came out with her jar on her shoulder. The girl was very beautiful, a virgin. No man had had relations with her. She went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, "Please let me drink a little water from your jar." And she said, "Drink, my lord." And she quickly lowered her jar to her hand and gave him a drink. Then when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I'll draw also for your camels till they have finished drinking." So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran back to the well to draw. She drew for all his camels. Meanwhile, the man was gazing at her in silence to know whether the Lord had made his journey successful or not. Then it came about, when the camels had finished drinking, that the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her wrists weighing 10 shekels in gold, and said, "Whose daughter are you? Please tell me, is there room for us to lodge in your father's house?" She said to him, "I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor." Again she said to him, "We have plenty of both straw and feed, and room to lodge in." Then the man bowed low and worshipped the Lord. And he said, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his loving kindness and his truth toward my master. As for me, the Lord has guided me in the way to the house of my master's brothers." Then the girl ran and told her mother's household about these things. Now Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. And Laban ran outside to the man at the spring. And it came about that when he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's wrists, and when he heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, saying, "This is what the man said to me," he went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. And he said, "Come in, blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside, since I have prepared the house and a place for the camels?" So the man entered the house. Then Laban unloaded the camels, and he gave straw and feed to the camels, and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. But when food was set before him to eat, he said, "I will not eat until I have told my business." And he said, "Speak on." So he said, "I'm Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master, so that he has become rich. And he has given him flocks and herds and silver and gold, and servants and maids and camels and donkeys. Now Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master in her old age, and he has given him all that he has. My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I live, but you shall go to my father's house and to my relatives and take a wife for my son.' I said to my master, 'Suppose the woman doesn't follow me?' He said to me, 'The Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you to make your journey successful. You will take a wife for my son from my relatives and from my father's house. Then you'll be free from my oath when you come to my relatives. And if they do not give her to you, you'll be free from my oath.' So I came today to the spring and said, 'O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you will make my journey on which I go successful, behold, I am standing by the spring, and may it be that the maiden who comes out to draw and to whom I say, "Please let me drink a little water from your jar," and she will say to me, "You drink, and I'll draw from your for your camels also," let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son." Before I had finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebekah came out with her jar on her shoulder and went down to the spring and drew. I said to her, "Please let me drink." She quickly lowered her jar from her shoulder and said, "Drink, and I'll water your camels also." So I drank, and she watered the camels also. Then I asked her and said, "Whose daughter are you?" And she said, "The daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him." And I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her wrists. And I bowed low and worshipped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who had guided me in the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. So now, if you're going to deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. If not, let me know that I may turn to the right hand or to the left." Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, "The matter comes from the Lord, so we cannot speak to you, bad or good. Here's Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken." It came about, when Abraham's servant heard their words, that he bowed himself to the ground before the Lord. The servant brought out articles of silver and articles of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother, to her mother. Then he and the men who were with him ate and drank, spent the night. When they arose in the morning, he said, "Send me away to my master." But her brother and her mother said, "Let the girl stay with us a few days, say 10. Afterwards she may go." He said to them, "Do not delay me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master." And they said, "We will call the girl and consult her wishes." Then they called Rebekah and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" she said, I will go. Thus they sent away their sister, Rebekah, and her nurse with Abraham's servant and his men. They blessed Rebekah and said to her, may you, our sister, become thousands of 10,000s, and may your descendants possess the gate of those who hate them. Then Rebekah arose with her maids, and they mounted the camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Now Isaac had come from going to Beer Lahai Roy, for he was living in the Negev. Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward the evening. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, camels were coming. Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. She said to the servant, who's that man walking in the field to meet us? The servant said, he's my master. Then she took her veil and covered herself. The servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother's tent, and he took Rebekah. She became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. That's a long chapter, Jamie.
That's a long chapter.
You didn't even give me like any encouragement for reading that thing. All right.
Golf clap. So, several things that I'm curious about in this particular chapter. Why not take a wife from the Canaanites? Why was it, you know, is it simply because they're not there?
They're not there. You mean spiritually they're right. Not on board? Perhaps the biggest, if not the biggest, one of the three biggest themes in the book of Genesis and throughout the Bible is the seed of the woman versus the seed of the serpent. That's really what you're getting here, is Sarah has died, Abraham's really old, he's about to die. What's going to happen to the seed? What's with the line, right? The seed of the woman is going to be okay. That's why this chapter is so long. It's protecting the seed, the chosen seed, right? The promises are all going to come through this line, so you're going to get a lot of detail about the next wife coming in. She's from the right line, you know, everything's being guarded. It's a very weird, in some ways, it was very customary to get a wife like this, but in some ways it's weird. I mean, the guy's not even there. The servant goes, travels a long distance, and won't even let Rebekah have like an extra day with her family. You know, you come with me now, or it's no deal. You know, just you got to make that break. You got to get in the line of the seed of the woman. And she accepts that, right? She goes, I'll go. You know, of her own free will. I will go right now. And she's not marrying a pauper. I mean, the guy's already given her a bunch of gold. I mean, she's in for a good deal that way. But nonetheless, she leaves her family instantly, you know, to get in this line.
Gotcha.
So that's the big idea.
Canaan, remind me. I'm trying to remember. That is from Ham.
Ham, who was cursed, right? The Canaanites are cursed. You don't want to be, this chosen seed's not coming from that.
So it goes clear back to Noah. So we're talking quite a bit of time.
Yes, but Moses, but again, go back to 1450 BC. You're an Israelite slave coming out of Egypt. So you personally are not going that far back. What you're doing is reading what Moses is saying or listening to him read it to you, one or the other. And you're going, this is all about this chosen line. And I'm in the chosen line. And oh yeah, those Canaanites, those guys are not. That's where we're going, to dispossess those guys. They're in our land.
Now, any idea or insight that you can provide as to why wasn't Isaac allowed to go?
That's a great question, too, because Abraham's adamant on that.
Adamant.
You know, don't do that. The deal
twice
is off.
He says it.
The deal's off. You know, you're free to drop the promise if she doesn't come, but don't take him back there.
Right.
He perceived it as breaking the promise. Right. We're in a covenant with God, mm-hmm. and this is the land that was given to us. We don't own it yet, but we're not leaving this spot.
This is where we're supposed
to be. This is what God said.
Almost.
So he would see that as an act of faithlessness to do that. Even though you could rationalize it 100 different ways, Abraham would look at that as, you're stepping outside the boundaries of the deal God made with us if you do that.
Well, and obviously, you know, the history proves that he was correct in that.
That's right.
Now, something that struck me, Bob, was how specific, you know, so the servant goes on this journey.
Yeah.
And it's not just like from here, you know, across
no,
the street.
No, he's gone weeks.
Just to get there. And when he gets there, his prayer is so specific.
It is. He's on a specific journey, and he prays specifically. You're right to mention the details. So what the reader picks up on, the bottom line, what you should theologically conclude is God's behind us.
Mm-hmm.
He's protecting this line. That's way too specific, you know, for a normal, but it has to do with the seed. So it's a huge issue. So God is very much involved.
Well, and it was obvious to me as well. We talk a lot about the faith of Abraham, the faith of his line. His servant, extremely faithful.
Yeah, all the people, I think, in Abraham's household have been living under Abraham's leadership. Mm-hmm. And he's very vocal about, you know, they're doing some weird things. You know, we're going to battle against five kings, and we don't even own this land. You know, why are we here? And, geez, man, you were going to sacrifice your kid? You know, so they've seen a lot of acts of God on Abraham's behalf, and his whole family's pretty solid.
Yeah, and
that servant, you know, I mean, that's why he entrusted him with the task, I'm sure. You know, this is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the stage of the unfolding of God's plan, this is a huge moment. Who do I need to send to go do this? I'm sure he just didn't flip a coin and take any old guy.
Right.
He took the most faithful guy he could find.
And it really hit me, I guess. You know, we talk a lot about prayer, and we should be in prayer constantly.
That's right. If our battles are God's battles, you need to be in prayer all the time. Because you see these same things coming up in almost every chapter. Like, as soon as Rebecca comes back, we're going to read pretty soon, she's having trouble getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like Sarah did. It's a constant until Isaac really prays for her. Like, people today, even Christians, don't typically pray for that, right? It's, no, I just go to bed with my wife, we do our thing, and we have a kid. Well, you need to pray about that because God's in charge of that stuff.
Well, and that's what's just ringing clear right now to me as we discuss this, is that it's that faith and understanding that if you've worked on building that relationship with your father, then you shouldn't ever be, or correct me if I'm wrong, but you shouldn't ever be wonder, you know, should I go to him right now and ask him?
You shouldn't be outside the relationship.
Right.
Once you get used to walking with him, why would you walk any other place than right next to him?
Well, and I mean, it would have been very easy for him to say, okay, you know, dear Lord, dear God, if you know, the first girl with blonde hair that comes up, or brown hair, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, something very general.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got 10 camels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
he's asking a pretty big...
Right.
Not any girl's going to say, hey, let me do your camels too. That's a lot of work.
Right.
Water is heavy.
And carrying it up.
Yeah, she's
not turning on a faucet.
She's going the extra mile.
without being asked.
Yeah, she doesn't even know what's going on. She's just volunteering to do that.
Yeah, I learned a lot from that little part, that it's important to be specific in your prayers.
It certainly was in this case.
Mm-hmm. Because that's that conversation. That's, you know, in any type of communication, if the information isn't transferred correctly, you know, it's like that phone game, you know.
Yeah. And then think of this too. She you know, his job is to get a woman from the household of his father. And she is. You know what? He's like, well, so who are you? Oh, my dad's Bethuel, son of Nahor. It's the very one he was
looking for.
Yeah.
Now, 24, verse 31.
What, Jamie?
31.
Okay.
Come in, blessed of the Lord.
Yeah.
How is it so obvious to everyone that Abraham's family, their group, is blessed by the Lord?
Well, by this point, they've seen what he gave Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big chunk of dough. I don't know how to put it in today's terms, but that 10 shekel gold bracelet is pretty big. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You've met people even where we live, you know, when the guy comes over to your house and he brings $1,000 bottle of wine, you're kind of going, ooh, okay, this guy has, you know, got some resources.
Yeah, we shouldn't drink that bottle. That's too expensive to drink.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've noticed some stuff. These aren't paupers that just really need a place to stay.
And I really...
How about this, though?
Go ahead.
I'm surprised you didn't ask this. Blessed of the Lord. How's he know about the Lord?
That was my next question.
Okay.
Literally. Literally. We're like...
Yeah, there you go.
On the same page, yeah. How? Why?
There could be... The only two answers I could think of are these. I give you the first one, which I don't think is the real answer, but I could understand if it was... And then I'll give you what I think is the answer. The first answer could be, that's not necessarily what he said, that's the way Moses wrote it. You know, like, oh, blessed of Shamash, or blessed of Ra, and Moses didn't want that in there, so he substituted words. Okay, but I don't think that's the answer. I think when Abraham left the family, I think he told them why.
I see.
And I think the family was like, wow, you know, that's not an everyday kind of thing. Okay, you believe in one God, and his name is Yahweh. And okay, so maybe they, you know, got on board with that.
And they saw the blessings that Abraham did receive.
That would be my guess. That's what I think the real answer is. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's where they are. Like, Laban doesn't prove to be such a good guy as we see in the following pages, but he may attribute Abraham's wealth to what Abraham believed, Yahweh.
And I think it's interesting that as he told them the story and, you know, about his journey, and he came to the spring, and he prayed, and then here comes Rebecca. They didn't question that.
No, in fact, they say, where's the verse? They say, you know, we can't speak good or ill
right
about this. This matters from the Lord.
And they recognize that.
Verse 50. Then Laban and Bethuel announced and said, the matter comes from the Lord, so we cannot speak to you bad or good. I think that's that phrase, we can't speak bad or good, is a colloquial phrase that amounts in our culture to our opinion doesn't matter. I think that's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So the servant's going, so what do you think? Can I? And they're going, that's not, we can't give an opinion on this. That's from God. It's not our place to trump God's hand.
And again, interesting the language he used. So now, if you are going to deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me. And if not, let me know that I may turn to the right hand or to the left.
Mm-hmm.
How many times do we hear that in Scripture?
Yeah. Is this going to work out, or do I need to, go off?
Should I stay or should I go now?
Yeah. And that's right. And then they try to delay him. He doesn't want any piece of that. And gosh, books later in the Bible, you're going to see that same issue. A prophet comes up in 1 Kings and he's delayed by someone on his task, and he lets the guy keep postponing him. And ultimately, it costs his life. Here the servant's like, no delay. And it's kind of weird. You take a young woman from her family to a place she's never been, with people she's never met, and you're going to leave the next day. That's a pretty big deal.
That'd be tough to do.
I mean, you could tell also that's from the Lord, because those are not normal circumstances.
Right.
Hey, their request is legitimate. Hey, maybe give us 10 days here. We got to say our goodbyes. The servant won't have it.
Well, no, he says, obviously, this is the Lord's wishes, and why are we going to delay his wishes? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, and also, the chapter is so long because you get the same story twice. Mm-hmm. Like, you already read what happened, and then the servant tells Laban and Bethuel the exact same story you just read.
Mm-hmm.
So, you get it twice. So, one legitimate question to ask is why Moses is very space conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he say something like, so the servant, quote, told Laban and Bethuel what had happened? Because you already know, you already have that. Why does he repeat it? It's not 100% verbatim, but it's pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pretty close to the exact same thing. Why? Why take 20 more verses to say the exact same thing? And to me, the answer is, this is from the Lord.
The sovereignty. That's what I felt when I read it.
Twice now, the exact same thing. Hurry up and take her. This is from the Lord. Because when you get later on in this book itself, within the confines of Genesis, Joseph is going to end up in prison down in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to interpret the dream. And he says to Pharaoh that the reason God gave you this dream twice was because it's certain. And so that's what I think is going on here. You're getting it twice because this is definitely the woman. This is God's plan.
It's certain.
It's coming through Rebecca's seat. It's certain.
I can see that. I can see that, especially after you pointed out. But yeah, in verse 35, the Lord is greatly blessed. In verse 56, the Lord has prospered my way.
Yeah. Yeah, God's hand was all over this transition from Sarah to Rebecca.
Well,
here's the seed of the woman. Here's the line.
And am I thinking down the right lines here, Bob? But so many times I know in my life, I've really wanted to take credit for, what has been done. But as we're reading here, They don't take credit. They know where it came from. They know who the provision is from. They know who they're...
Yeah, you could imagine when the servant comes back and Abraham, goes, how'd it go? I don't think the servant said, I did it.
Right.
I think the servant said, the Lord did it, just like we hoped and prayed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how he'd answer that.
And I think it's important for us today to take the same approach.
Yeah, it's, gosh, how would I say it? There's such power in that when you're walking with God, you naturally give him the credit because it's so obviously him that was doing it. But it's so fun to be along for the ride. I mean, I think the servant's faith was greatly strengthened
had to
when he got back. He was joyful. yes, mm-hmm. you know, God did it. But yeah, you just got to make, you know, your battles are God's battles, then you're always on the winning side. I mean, it's just an awesome walk through life. And you can lay down certain things that our culture cherishes are just not important to you. They're not your weapons. That's not how you fight and walk.
Right.
You walk with God. That's totally different. And he'll prepare your way. He'll bring you exactly where he wants to bring you.
That answers a lot of questions for me, Bob, you know, based on the conversations we were having on our way over here. You know, I think a lot of us struggle with that faith, you know, the strength of faith that is very disciplined in this family, in this tribe.
Yeah.
And there is a discipline to it. There is
And they've dropped the ball a few places, mm-hmm. right? But never permanently. You know, okay, we got to have a kid because the promise is God's going to give us, you know, as many children and as there are stars in the sky and so on, and we got nothing. And you quit menstruating, Sarah, a couple decades ago.
Right.
And I'm almost 100. We have nothing, even though God has promised. And then here it is. And they tried to do it themselves. Oh, take my maid. You know, mm-hmm. they're trying to circumvent the plan. And there's God going, no. No, it's going to be just like I said. And then they have Isaac. So you could see them at that point when they had Isaac so strong in their faith. It worked out exactly like God said.
It's plan A that you call it. Plan A
God does
is
not
always plan A.
From that.
And I think it's you know, for me, what I'm taking out of this first episode tonight is understanding that God's plan and God's will is perfect.
Yeah.
And really putting the faith and the strength in that belief.
That's right. And then you know what really helps with that? Because we can say it all day long, but to wake up tomorrow morning and practice it is a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that makes it much, much easier, and this is my own way to phrase it, so feel free to pun on it. I just don't know how to say it a better way. But remember who your audiences are. You have three of them. And I'm going to name them in order. And we usually reverse the order. Your primary audience in your life, you know, like, who are you playing for? Who's clapping when you go to bat and so on? God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's number one. That's how Abraham saw that. Okay, number two is the angelic realm is watching you. Both bad guys and good guys. And they're watching. Number three, in fact, they're called the watchers in the intertestamental literature.
Hmm.
And number three, mankind. Okay, your friends, your neighbors, your family. And most of us play for number three. And it's like, what a waste of time. I mean, that is such a fickle crowd.
Right.
And their expectations are not your expectations and so on. They're certainly not God's, generally speaking. So, hey, forget about number three. Play for number one with number two in mind. And let number three happen as, you know, the chips fall.
Right.
Mostly you're going to be looked at as pretty weird. So just get used to that by your peers. You know, mankind's going to look at you as weird. I'm mm-hmm. sure they looked at Abraham, though they had respect, you know. That guy's kind of weird, you know. You know, there's really thousands of gods. He only believes in one. Guy's a little weird. I'm sure when Abraham left the oasis, there was plenty of conversation about how weird Abraham was. But what's he care about what the Hittites think or the Canaanites? He doesn't care. He's playing for God. So keep your audiences in mind. If you can wake up every day thinking, wait, God's my audience, then second, the angelic realm is watching me. Bad guys are hoping I fall. Good guys are cheering for me. And number three, mankind kind of care less what they think. I mean, I want to be a test.
Right.
I'm not saying that the right way. It's not care
less. I see what you're saying.
But it's their third.
Right.
We need
to be a testimony of God's word.
That's right.
To
and Abraham was.
Family.
I mean, you know,
obviously,
the Canaanites
obviously.
Recognize him. He was a testimony to them. But if you keep number one in mind, you can be a successful witness to number three. But if you put number three as number one, you're going to drop the ball.
It won't work.
Yeah, it'll control you instead of you controlling it.
Well, and which is totally, I don't want to say anti-Bible, but it's anti the information that we're given. It's I don't think anti is the right word I'm looking for, Bob. It's the incorrect order, as you just put it. I don't think I could put it any better than that.
That's right.
There is an order.
That's right. So, why don't we say a prayer? That was a long chapter. We did two of them, 23 and 24. And we'll come back momentarily and do 25, but it'll be a separate podcast. Lord, we thank you for your work in the life of Abraham. And we realize the significance of that. You were laying a foundation for all of the future, even as you promised Abraham that many tribes and nations would come from him. And in the New Testament, Paul details that in Romans chapter 4 about how it's through the faith of Abraham that we are adopted, when we have that same faith into his family. And we are considered children of God, and we fulfill the promises you made to him. So we pray that we would learn from his life, his faithful walk, and how your hand was upon him in all matters. And we trust our own lives into your hand in that same way. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thanks, Bob.